This is the IBJ podcast for the week of May 26th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Hey, we just hit a pretty significant milestone. Memorial Day weekend marked the first holiday weekend of the coronavirus crisis. It happened to be the weekend when Marion County joined the rest of central Indiana in allowing outdoor dining. Meanwhile, Governor Holcomb accelerated to stage three of his back on track plan, allowing social gatherings of up to 100 people and opening pools and campgrounds and most athletic courts and fields. Marion County is on the slower schedule, but it's edging towards stage three. And while all that sounds like great progress, be advised that individuals are still strongly encouraged, but not required, to wear a face mask when in public or around other people. So for the moment, the only thing that is really clear is that after doing our research and hearing what the experts have to say, we have to decide for ourselves what level of risk we are willing to accept without doing anything that would put other people in danger. And this has led to some long and sometimes painful conversations for families around the dinner table. What is the family willing to risk for the potential reward of reestablishing personal connections and getting back to something that feels like a normal life? Families need to decide whether grandkids should spend any time near their grandparents, especially those most likely to contract COVID-19. Some parents soon will be under more pressure to get back to their regular workplaces, and they're agonizing over whether smaller children should go back to daycare. We're about to enter a new youth sports season, and parents need to calculate whether the social and physical benefits are worth a potential infection. And parents already are trying to decide what they'll do in the fall when, or maybe that should be if, K through 12 schools reopen. Can schools, which are infamous breeding grounds of respiratory diseases, significantly lower the risk of transmission? Now, I have a four-year-old at home, and both of my parents are still with us, thank God. So I have a keen interest in some of these questions. My wife is a public school teacher, so we talk a lot about what's going to happen with K through 12 schools and their students. So this week I asked two public health experts from the University of Indianapolis to answer a basket full of questions that families are wrestling with. Now, some of these are mine, and some of these are submitted by IBJ readers, especially for this edition of the podcast. And it bears mentioning that our two experts both have families with kids, and they're willing to share the thought processes that have led to some of their decisions. Here's our conversation. Joining me in IBJ Podcast virtual studio are Heidi Hanser-Rauch, who is Associate Professor and Director of the Public Health Program at the University of Indianapolis. Heidi, thanks for making time to share your expertise.
Thanks for having me on.
And also with us is Kara Cecil, who is an Assistant Professor of Public Health at University of Indianapolis. Kara, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And just a quick note for our listeners to keep in mind during the conversation, neither of our guests are medical doctors, but they both have doctoral degrees in public health. So I'm going to launch right into these questions, guys. A series of questions is based on my own research, my own anxiety that I experience from day to day, questions that my family has, and also questions that have been submitted by our readers. The first question is kind of an odd question. What public health question are you guys hearing the most this week?
I'm happy to start. Most of the conversation I've been having with family and friends and other moms around me, moms and dads, is about reopening the schools. You know, we are nearing our summer holiday that we expected to have. But as we look forward to the fall, there's a lot of questions and a need to plan or need to be able to plan for what reopening the schools may look like. We're also seeing some information coming out this week about guidance for reopening schools. So for me, that's the hot topic this week.
And for me, I would say, just following with the conversations with family and friends, I've heard a lot of questions about, do we have to wear masks in public? Is that a requirement? Or people saying, well, I refuse to wear a mask in public. Why is this important? And so, you know, again, I would follow up and say, you know what, if you choose not to wear a mask, it's not just you that you are putting at risk, it is the people around you. Because the reason we wear a mask, we have seen that the rate of transmission of this virus is minuscule if the person who is infected and potentially doesn't know it is wearing a mask, and the people who are not infected and would like to be protected are also wearing a mask. So that seems to be a big question that I'm seeing a lot about, is the mask wearing. And I would just highly encourage people to wear a mask. It is really the best way right now to protect other people.
So let me jump right to the personal. One of the questions that I heard the most is, when can grandchildren be with their grandparents again? Under what conditions is that safe?
My response to this is, it's entirely dependent on the risk factors for those involved. So if grandma and grandpa are high risk, and the family has not, on being honest with themselves, has not been doing a good job at social distancing and using our common sense precautions, then mm-hmm. those visits are high risk. But mm-hmm. if grandma and grandpa are 65, if they're healthy, if the family is really doing the best they can to follow the recommended social distancing, mask wearing, things like that, then at some point, the family will make the decision that that risk is worth the reward.
Right. And I would say it's constantly a risk reward discussion that you have to have among your family and try to make that decision. So part of that absolutely is, what is the risk level of the grandparents and the rest of the family? In addition, how well has everybody been participating in the social distancing? I will say in my case, we have not been able to, and probably won't for the near future, be within 6 feet of my parents, our children's grandparents. And that's because I have a father who is definitely high risk. And, you know, so for us, we as a family have really been participating in social distancing, social isolation. And yet we still don't feel comfortable. I would say avoid the hugs. You know, they don't, if you want to see them and it needs to be face to face, I would still try at best to maintain that 6 feet of distancing. Engage with your grandparents or parents outside, possibly, if that's, you know, if weather is good and that's a possibility, have an outdoor gathering and try to do it that way. But I would say still trying, even if you feel like you've done a really nice job of social distancing, if it is possible to maintain that 6 feet of distance, I would. And I know that that's not possible for everybody, because some individuals, the grandparents are the caregivers for the grandchildren. And so, you know, if you live in the same house with them or you've been seeing them regularly, that's one thing. But that family has to have that conversation about what is our risk level? What are we doing outside of the home? And do we feel that this is safe for us?
So I have to say, this is God's honest truth. I just had this conversation with my mom maybe 20 minutes ago. So she wants to take a walk around the lake with the 4-year-old out. So it's outside. Let's say they can somehow stay 6 feet apart. Does that seem okay? Does the 4-year-old wear a mask?
It depends on the risk factors for your mother.
Sorry, and she's 80.
Which that age group would put her in a higher risk category. The other thing I would say is, you can have an 80-year-old who's still remarkably healthy with no underlying conditions. And so that's a very individualized decision to make. Yeah. And again, you're weighing the risk versus reward. Right. I can tell you my parents, we have seen my parents almost every day. They are they're both 65 plus now, but exceptionally healthy. We have been home. You know, we haven't been doing a lot out. We've picked up some takeout, you know, and done some click list. But other than that, you know, so we've seen them pretty much every day. But my grandparents just returned to Florida. They're higher risk for other reasons, and I haven't seen them face to face.
Yeah, so I think that's a conversation you need to have and decide what's the level of the ability of the 4-year-old to stay within 6 feet. You know, sometimes with 4-year-olds, they want a hug, they run towards you. That's just the nature of a 4-year-old, right? So thinking about then too, your family and how well have you been able to distance? Because we know that children are petri dishes. they touch a lot of things. They touch their eyes, nose, and mouth very consistently. Even if we are working so hard with them to do lots of hand washing, it's just, that's very hard for young children. And so again, those are the conversations that need to be had among the family members of, you know, do we think this is feasible? Can we do this safely? You know, outside, I would say, is probably safer than inside, but maybe if the 4-year-old is supervised by you and you are making sure that the 4-year-old maintains that 6 feet of distance and you all are wearing masks, then, you know, potentially it's very safe. It just really depends on your situation.
Okay. Let's stay on the topic of toddlers and preschoolers. Here's the other big one that I heard. Is it safe to let toddlers and preschoolers back into a daycare or a preschool setting? And if so, I mean, what conditions would you expect?
So we know that children contract COVID at a much lower rate than anyone older than that, right? The risk for children, I think 19 or 20 is when this turns over, is less for COVID than it is for flu. So we know that children are not at the exact same risk that adults, even especially older adults are. But with that, children don't understand. They are not developmentally ready to understand a pandemic. They are not developmentally ready and they don't have that impulse control to sort of maintain the social distancing guidelines that are encouraged. And they certainly, depending on the age, it is not that they can't even wear a mask. You know, under two, you should not be masking children. And depending on if the child has a health risk otherwise, they shouldn't be wearing a mask. I think this is a really hard question to answer. My children are out of preschool at this point. So, you know, I'm an armchair quarterback at this point. But and the thing is, people need their kids in daycare so they can go to work, and that matters. So this is a decision that a family has to make on what's an acceptable level of risk for them. We make these kind of decisions as parents on a lot of different factors. So I have two kids with life-threatening nut allergies. I'm not alone. A lot of people have kids with nut allergies that are life-threatening. Each family has to decide what level of risk is acceptable for them. So in my house, we have peanut butter and I eat Snickers. And so does my husband. And I'll even eat a Snickers around the kids or something. And that's an acceptable level of risk for us. The kids eat things that are labeled as may contain or process in a factory that also processes nuts. But I have family with the same diagnosis, and that is absolutely not an acceptable level of risk for them. It's the same decision-making process. People have to decide at what level of risk they're comfortable.
And so as a parent, I would say ask a lot of questions before you would return your child to a daycare setting or any type of public setting, right? What are the cleaning procedures that they have in place? What are the distancing measures? Are they keeping the children with the same teacher all day long? So we know if you keep the same group of children and the same teacher together versus, you know, intermixing lots of different classes and different age groups, that's a safer process. I would ask a lot of questions and then, you know, decide as a family, as Kara was saying, what do we believe is the level of risk and is that acceptable for us? And, you know, here's the thing, when we look at something like a pandemic, there are a lot of us who are blessed to be in situations where we're able to watch our kids at home. We can work remotely and still be able to function, right, in our work roles and our family roles. There are people who are on the front lines every day who they have to have childcare. They don't have the option of working from home. If you are a physician, a doctor, a public health specialist who is out there collecting data and trying to do tracing, those people can't make that decision. So, you know, every day for them, it's that, you know, it's that decision of, do I maintain my income and go into work and try to protect other people? Or do I, you know, quit my job, stay home so that I can take care of my child who's at high risk? So, you know, there are different levels of questions that every family is going to have to ask. And then they have to make that individual decision for themselves. And it's challenging for a lot of people. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, a lot of people know enough to check the statistics and they see that the rates of infections for kids under 18 is very small, at least among those that have been tested. But a lot of people, I think, fear, and this is brought up pretty frequently in the literature that you read, that it is possible that they have COVID, but they are asymptomatic, so that they are dangerous and that they could be carrying it and then they could be transmitting it to people at home. Do we know anything? Is there any sort of number you can give me between 1 and 10 of the danger of that?
You know, this is the key component when we're talking about kids, right? We do know that in the state of Indiana right now, to receive a COVID test, and I just read the information from the state this morning, you know, we have a lot of testing sites that are opening up all the time, but you have to be in one of those high-risk populations or you have to have symptoms, basically, to be able to get one of those tests. And so typically healthy children are not going to be tested. And because we know that Children are much less likely to develop the symptoms of COVID. We know that then they're less likely to be tested for COVID. So what percentage of those children are carrying and participating in viral shedding, but then maybe is putting other individuals who are higher risk at risk of contracting the virus? We don't know. We don't have those numbers. And so, again, that's a big part of the discussion you have to have as a family, is, you know, who lives in our home together and who's going to be exposed to the child when the child comes home, and what procedures are we putting in place? You know, one thing that we are doing with our kids, anybody who goes out into public or anybody, you know, even our kids, if our oldest is out playing with some of his friends and maintaining the 6 feet, as soon as he comes in, he has to shower, change clothes, you know, shed everything when he comes in, because, you know, still it's what level of exposure is okay within our family. And we don't want to keep our 13-year-old from, you know, going out and playing outside. But then when he comes in, what are we putting in place? So the same thing with the children. If they're going into daycare and that's something that you've decided as a family needs to happen, then okay, when the child comes home, let's try to mitigate the risk best we can. So, you know, changing clothes and washing hands and putting all that in place, and then keeping them isolated from people who are at higher risk, because we just don't know that risk level.
The only number we do know is that 45% are asymptomatic of people, not children specifically, but of people are asymptomatic. So that's getting close to half are asymptomatic.
Is it fair to say that children's, like, kids 18 and under are less likely to become infected than adults?
With the data we have right now, it looks that way. But like you said, we are not probably adequately testing people 18 and under to give a definitive answer to that.
Right. I don't know that we can say they are less likely to be infected. I think what we can say is we are less likely to know whether or not they've been infected because they are so much less likely to show symptoms, right? So in this case, because we're not doing widespread random pool testing and those kinds of things to really get an idea of what does it look like? You know, if we were taking large random samples of, say, 15 to 18 year olds and testing them right now, we would better be able to say whether they were less likely to be infected. Whereas right now, I think it's more what we can say is they are less likely to show the symptoms if they are becoming infected.
All right, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. I'm talking with Heidi Hancher-Rauch and Kara Cecil, who teach public health at the University of Indianapolis, about the questions families are wrestling with as they try to determine acceptable risks for getting back to a more normal lifestyle.
Let's move up to the kids that would be in K through 12 schools. Now, in Europe, in many countries, they're already reopening the schools.
Or they didn't close them to begin with.
That's right, yeah. And they're open with, you know, a wide variety of measures that they're taking to keep the kids safe-ish. Under what circumstances should I feel safe letting my child go back to K through 12 school?
I would say this entirely depends on the health risk profile of your children specifically. So if you have otherwise healthy children, right, it would be something to consider. For me, because I have 3 school-age kids, I'm very interested to see what school will look like if and when they return. So I need school to be the better option than e-learning, right? In order for that risk reward to pay off. So I need the school environment to be more attractive, more appealing, and serve better than e-learning does at home. So I think the guidelines in schools, when they reopen, when we get that from the state, will be a major decision point for a lot of families. I mean, I've talked with a lot of families, you know, friends of the kids, and, you know, depending on what that looks like, they're not sending their kids back. And the truth is that a lot of them have the opportunity or the luxury to make that decision, but not everyone does.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I think, you know, again, it comes down to asking those questions about what is the school doing to put those protective measures in place. The CDC just recently released those guidelines for schools. And I know I'm hearing a lot of chatter among teachers saying, we can't do this. There's no way we can feasibly, you know, have the plexiglass or the plastic up in between the seats of the bus. And we can't, you know, there are all these measures we can't necessarily put in place. And you know, again, I think it's going to be a balance of the schools are going to be working really hard over the summer to figure out what are they able to do to meet those guidelines and those recommendations and requirements. And then families, again, are going to have to ask those questions, see what their schools are doing, and then make that decision as to, do I feel comfortable sending my child to school every day? And if that family's answer is yes, then that family absolutely should do it. And if that family's answer is no, and they have other options, then that family's going to need to make that decision.
I think youth sports are beginning to roll back. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the third biggest category of questions that we received. How safe are youth sports? And I know that there are a lot of variables there, including what kind of sport you're playing. What comes to mind? I would assume, for example, that whether or not you're inside or outside is a question.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm sure, Heidi, you're in the same boat, but this is, you know, coming to the forefront of conversations at home. We've been doing virtual soccer in the basement with Kevin. And so you're right. The question of whether or not that recreational activity is an indoor or outdoor activity is probably my top question. My son plays baseball and soccer. Both are outdoor sports. And so we as a family would choose to resume those face-to-face activities prior to basketball that he did in the winter. That's an indoor activity. It's much more difficult to spread out in basketball. So when baseball and soccer start back up, Kev will be there. Kev will, you know, my son will probably be there. We have had a lot of communication with our clubs about protocols and cleaning protocols and amendments to practice in the fields and directions for spectators to keep everyone at a distance. And so when that happens, I suspect we'll be there for those outdoor sports. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it's not basketball season yet and I don't have swimmers. So between soccer, baseball, and tennis, we're good. When we go back to volleyball and basketball, I don't know yet.
Well, coming from a basketball household, this is something we are grappling with right now because my son's travel team is starting up again this coming week. And my husband coaches that team. And so we have had lots of conversations back and forth about what is safe, what is the risk level we are willing to take, and can we do this? And their sports complex, my child, he plays out of the PAC, Pacers Athletic Center in Westfield, and they have put a lot of measures in place. And we have made the decision as a family that, okay, each player is going to have his own basketball. They have to wear masks. They're going to be socially distanced. They're only doing drills. They're not doing any kind of, you know, basketball supposedly is a non-contact sport anyway. We know there's a lot of contact in basketball. So they're not going to be doing any back and forth drilling. It's all going to be individualized. So we are going to allow him to do that. Now, I will say it's interesting that you asked this question because one of my colleagues just sent me an article today out of Italy, and it's and I can send this to you if you would like, but it's a return to play after COVID-19 pandemic, and it's a commentary, but it says, you know, a lot of parents are asking, should my child, if my child has had COVID or potentially been exposed to COVID, should I get a physician's evaluation before resuming sport activities? And, you know, so that's a question that maybe we haven't been thinking of. Maybe we've only been thinking of the spread of the virus, but we know that this virus can do significant damage, especially to the cardiorespiratory system. And so, you know, if you think your child has had symptoms of COVID or you believe that your child has been exposed, it really may be best to get the evaluation of a physician before you would allow your child to return to sports. And this article was recommending that, you know, they really should have something like have the heart examined, do an ECG, and make sure that the individual is healthy to return to high intensity types of activities.
Okay, let's do masks. Obviously, there are a lot of people who find masks very distasteful. Under what circumstances should we wear masks when we are indoors, but not at our home? Is that basically an all the time?
All the time. if you are going to be within 6 to 10 feet of other individuals from outside your household, wear a mask. You need to be wearing a mask. The other people should be wearing a mask. Even if you are not concerned about the personal risk to yourself, if you think, you know what, if I contract COVID, fine, I'm a youngish, healthy person, I think I'll be fine with it, I'm not really concerned. Okay, that, you know, that is your thinking about your own health. But the issue about wearing a mask is I wear a mask to protect you. You wear a mask to protect me, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is I want to be wearing a mask to protect the vulnerable people around me, and others should be wearing a mask because they, when they pass, cross paths with me in Walmart, Kroger, Menards, wherever, you don't know whether I'm high risk or not high risk. And so you should be wearing a mask to protect me. That's part of what we do as a society of people who engage with each other.
Let's say that I am on an outdoor porch with members of my family and we are 6 feet apart, mask or no mask.
Not members of your household, I assume.
Yeah, not members of the household. Yeah, these are people who we have not been living with.
If you can maintain a 6-10 is better. If you can maintain a 6 to 10 foot distance, that is our documented range where we can spread those particles that spread the disease. So I have had these conversations even months ago, and my neighbor would sit on her porch and I'm in my driveway and we're like 15 feet apart, but we just really needed to chat with someone that wasn't in this house. And so we have sat, you know, that far apart and chatted about whatever, and that's been great. If you cannot maintain that, if you're in an indoor space and can't maintain it, wear a mask.
Can I take walks with a friend outside?
Can you stay apart from said friend?
How far apart do we need to be?
6 to 10 feet.
6 to 10 feet. And that's without a mask or even with a mask?
That's without a mask.
10 without a mask.
6 to 10 without a mask. Okay. With a mask, I still assume that we can't like be arm in arm.
Right. Don't touch. Try not to touch. And maintain as much comfortable distance as possible. Yeah.
Can I just touch on the mask though? We need to make sure that people are wearing them correctly. If you wear them with your nose exposed, it is not effective. If you are using the disposable surgical mask, they are good for one day maximum. If you are using the cloth reusable, you need to wash them daily. What I would suggest is, if I go to the eye doctor and I wear a mask and I go in and out, and then later in the day I go to a click list order, I'm wearing a different mask. I had only wore them for 20 minutes maybe, but I have plenty. And so I switch it and then they need to be laundered. Mm-hmm. I've been making masks. I've just been giving them away. I enjoy doing it. It's satisfying. It's a quick project. It's satisfying. And I just, on my Facebook page in the neighborhood, who wants one? I'll put it on your step. We had an air conditioning repairman out. I was like, you want some masks? I see you're wearing one. Would you like some more? I actually have some that will match your uniform. Here's some more. I think we've seen a lot of community building in this pandemic. You know, if someone can make a mask and enjoys it, just give them away. I mean, it's fine. If you are home and you can watch someone's kids who must go to work, right, and that's an arrangement you've made, that's community building right there. We've had food trucks come to our neighborhood and make appointments and the whole deal, and that's community building. So I think there's some good things that have come out of this too.
I'll make an abrupt switch here to restaurants, since we've been told here, I think just today, that we can eat outdoors. Let's say that I want to do that. Under what conditions is that safe? Should I still be wearing a mask if I'm eating outdoors?
You can't wear a mask and eat food.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's challenging.
That is challenging.
So I would say, again, you're going to have to decide, your family, what level of risk are you willing to take? And if it is just you as a family and, you know, these are people that you have been in social isolation with, you're already sharing the same germs, and you are confident that all of the servers, the chefs, everybody else is wearing masks and doing proper cleaning and lots of hygiene, and that's a choice you're willing to make, and those tables are plenty well spread apart, and you aren't going to be close to other people without wearing a mask, you can make that decision. I, for one, I feel very strongly about supporting our local businesses. I'll do carry out. I am in no rush to get back to physically being in a restaurant, but I will continue to support them through carry out. I'm comfortable with that, but I do not see the need to be physically within that amount of space with lots of other people. So it's just, but that's, you know, you have to make that decision as a family.
Mm. Agreed. Agreed. It's not fun to go out to eat with three children anyway, so we didn't do a ton of that to begin with.
Amen.
Absolutely supporting carry out from the local businesses. You know, I had kind of a mental list of the places that we want to get takeout from, or I want to shop from, toy shops, bookstores, and they'll deliver it to my house.
Yeah. Or you can do safe curbside pickup, that type of thing. I would say absolutely support those businesses, do that. But we as a family are not yet going to be eating outdoors.
Agreed. Oh, so not even outdoors.
We're not, but that's, we're not. That is our choice.
Real quick, best options for summer vacations.
I can tell you what we're doing is we are going to a place, an island that we've been to 40 times probably. We rent a house. We clean it every single year before we go in and set our shop, and we will clean it after we leave.
I would say do not go to very crowded locations. I would stay away from things like amusement parks, which they can't be open yet anyway. Maybe go to smaller, more remote types of locations. I just saw a study that said most people are not planning to fly or stay in hotels this summer. I hate to say this for the hotel and air industry, but that's probably a pretty good idea. So I would say people are probably more likely to stay closer to home, drive to places, and then maybe do Airbnb, something like that, and do make sure you do lots of cleaning when you get there. Mm-hmm.
And what you do on vacation matters. So we typically do not go out to eat. We typically make our own dinners and just sort of hang around a beach. So that actually fits quite well into a social distancing model.
My thanks again to Heidi Hanscher-Rauch and Kara Cecil of the University of Indianapolis. Before I let you go this week, I want to draw your attention to a few stories in the latest issue of IBJ. Lindsay Erdody reports that some businesses hoping to rehire employees who've been laid off are running into vexing problems. Some of those former employees are now earning more in unemployment benefits than they would if they returned to work. And many are concerned about the safety of returning to work and how they'll cover childcare. Also in this week's issue, Sam Quinn takes a closer look at the dozens of relief funds that have cropped up in central Indiana in the last 2 months, how much money they have raised, and how that money is being spent. And Anthony Shotley examines an unexpected side effect of the coronavirus crisis. Stay-at-home orders have given rise to record levels of residential trash. You can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. Most of our coverage of the coronavirus crisis can be accessed for free on the website for all readers, and that includes our continuously updated digest of all the latest news. It's called The Latest, and you'll see it on the IBJ homepage. And remember, for unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content from today and yesterday and even the previous economic crisis, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there. We'll be back again next week.